This is Second Look, a look back at some of the stories and conversations from the past week. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Even with the tragic deaths of two WDBJ TV journalists this week, we had other stories to tell, and we'll get to those in this half hour. But first, for those of you who feel like the deaths of Allison Parker and Adam Ward hit close to home, WDBJ has provided links to memorial funds in their honor. Allison was a graduate of James Madison University, and JMU has set up a memorial fund in her name. And there's also information about the memorial fund through Virginia Tech, which was Adam's alma mater. There's a link to the page at the WDBJ website where you can find out how to contribute to either or both of those memorial funds. That's on the Second Look page at WMRA.org. We'll get to this week's episode of The Spark and to Our Island Universe, too, later on, but let's start with Jesse Nadler's report on a relatively new therapy for the family pet. Used to be that drugs or surgery or even euthanasia were the only ways to help ease the pain of pets with hip dysplasia or arthritis, but there's hope from the next big thing on the horizon for treating aging pets: stem cell therapy.
For the past year, Corey Bergstresser of Lexington has had to witness his St. Bernard Cujo suffer from rapidly deteriorating function in his hips. Corey wasn't really sure what to do about it. On the one hand, large breeds such as St. Bernards have a lifespan of 8 to 10 years. Cujo, who is 8, is in his twilight years, and joint issues are almost to be expected. But it was still gut-wrenching for Corey.
He just starts to make his way up the stairs, and I hear him whimpering. And, you know, I go to see what's wrong. He's only about 25% of the way up the staircase. And he's just standing there, and his back legs are shaking, like he's even scared to take another step. So I picked him up, you know, by his rear, by his hips, and helped him get up the stairs. You know, he's a 150-pound dog. It wasn't an easy task. And, you know, that's when it really set in.
Corey first heard about stem cell therapy from veterinarian Walter Logan of the Well Pet Group, a concierge practice for companion animals in Lexington. A vet for 36 years, Dr. Logan began transitioning into stem cell therapy last year.
I actually think that regenerative medicine therapy is going to change the way we practice in the next few years on many, many fronts. And I'm very excited about it and happy to be on the forefront of it.
Since the early to mid-aughts, stem cell therapy has been used by the equine industry to treat orthopedic conditions in horses, repairing fractures, tendon and ligament injuries, and treating arthritis. The transition to small animal therapy, meaning dogs and cats, is new. Part of this, of course, is the money. Dr. Logan says it costs roughly $1,800 to $2,000 for pets who come to him through an outside referral. Members of his practice pay significantly less.
Regenerative stem cells are attracted to inflammation, and these joints are just full of inflammation. Mm-hmm. That's what creates the pain, makes the animal uncomfortable, you know, limits their range. Mm-hmm. And the first thing these cells do is decrease the inflammation.
Stem cells are essentially immature cells that do not yet have a specific job to do in the body. They can be extracted from several different body tissues, but Dr. Logan pulls his from an area of extra fatty tissue below the animal's belly button. The tissue is put through a process to separate the stem cells from the fat. The stem cells are then injected into the injured part of the body.
7 days after the stem cell treatments, we had come into the basement, and you know, we start to go up the stairs, and I'm like, you know, here's kind of the test. He didn't run up them, but unassisted, he never whimpered, he never stopped. And that's when it really set in that, you know, I think I've done the right thing, that this is really going to make a difference.
It sounds like a magic bullet, and in some ways it is. Getting to watch an older dog walk easily up the steps where a few years ago he might have had to be put on a lifetime of medications or even be put down. But stem cell therapy, particularly in the small animal realm, has been moving at such an accelerated clip, results have been primarily anecdotal. Rigorous long-term scientific study of certain conditions, as well as industry oversight, hasn't always kept pace. This is according to Jennifer Barrett, a professor of equine surgery at Virginia Tech's Marion DuPont Scott Equine Medical Center. She says stem cell therapy in small animals is promising.
There's some conditions where the evidence is quite good for stem cell therapy. We're doing a lot of research looking at it to treat osteoarthritis and we're doing research in a large clinical trial in dogs to look at treating tendon injury in dogs. And our initial results are very favorable, but they're not published.
In June, the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine finally published guidelines for the industry, an indication of greater regulatory oversight in the coming years.
The question came, is the veterinary field and is the FDA Center for Veterinary Medicine going to regulate the veterinary stem cells the same way as the human stem cells are regulated? And essentially the answer came down, essentially yes, they're being regulated very similarly.
The vet schools, the research labs, they're just now starting to really pump out these papers and put their own departments together. And so, you know, over the next few years, I think you're really going to see this take off. And it's going to change the way, as I said earlier, that we practice medicine.
For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
In March, two Central Virginia United Methodist Church clergy were suspended for marrying same-sex couples. WMRA's Carrot Lofton talked to the pastors involved and took a look at where they stand now that the suspension is over.
The first time Amanda Garber was approached by a same-sex couple in her congregation asking her to preside over their wedding, she said no.
I was their pastor. I did their premarital counseling. But because of the stand of my denomination, when they asked me to officiate at their wedding, I said no. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Garber said she felt like a coward and vowed the next time a same-sex couple asked her to marry them, if she genuinely thought they should be married, she would say yes. The opportunity came 2 years later in the fall of 2014.
This time, by two women who were part of RISE's launch team.
In fact, she said, they met as part of RISE's launch team, which was the group of leaders who helped evolve RISE from a student ministry at James Madison University to a downtown Harrisonburg church.
When they asked me, I prayed, I wrestled, and I prayed some more, and I had a deep sense that I was to say yes. I knew the consequences. I knew what might happen if I indeed presided at their wedding. And I've thought many times, what I listened to most deeply was this sense of peace. This sense of peace that I believe is of God.
The consequences included the possibility that she would lose her licensure as an ordained minister, and therefore her livelihood, and that her fledgling church would be abruptly left without a pastor. She did it anyway.
That was November 1st. By November 3rd, at around noon, I received a call from my supervisor.
Garber's supervisor declined to comment for this story, but by Garber's account, he asked her if she officiated at the wedding.
I said, yes, I did. And he informed me that it was highly likely that charges would be brought against me because I had violated church law.
It just so happened that less than a month before Garber officiated a same-sex marriage, another ordained Central Virginia pastor, John Copenhaver from Winchester, also officiated a same-sex wedding and was charged. His supervisor also declined to comment.
A lot of people thought that this was an affront to the church. It was kind of an open rebellion. That is, I was saying I was willing to disobey the discipline which says that clergy cannot do same-gender marriages.
But for Copenhaver, same-sex marriage was not a political issue, but a civil rights issue of discrimination about which he needed to take a stand.
I was trying to be obedient to that part of the discipline that calls us to be inclusive, and I thought I was being biblically obedient as well in my reading of the scriptures, at the same time knowing that I was violating ecclesiastical law at the time.
His supervisor and the Virginia Conference of the United Methodist Church disagreed with his approach. By March, punishment had been decided upon through a complaint resolution. 3 months of suspension for Copenhaver, who does not pastor a congregation, but is professor emeritus of religion at Shenandoah University, and, for Garber, a 1 month suspension for ministerial duties without pay. A church trial was avoided. The bishop of the UMC Virginia Conference declined to comment for the story. Instead, church officials directed WMRA to the statement by the Virginia Conference on their website, which states, in part, that church officials and the pastors are, quote, not of one mind on matters of human sexuality.
I can say that there were moments of indescribable pain but there were also moments of indescribable support as well.
Garber's month without pay was reimbursed by Reconciling Ministries Network, which, according to their website, quote, mobilizes United Methodists of all sexual orientations and gender identities to transform our church and world into the full expression of Christ's inclusive love. And her church, they were
confused and hurt, I would say. Because there's just such a sense of how could people who claim to follow Jesus treat each other this way, even if you don't agree necessarily. How could this be? Isn't there a better way?
As can be found across the blogosphere, for many members of the UMC, the answer is a resounding yes, don't marry same-sex couples. But Garber and Copenhaver both believe they did the right thing, despite the pain it caused them and their communities.
At the end of the day, I made a choice. A choice rooted in who I believe God is and who I believe Jesus is. My choice had consequences, and I stood by my choice every step of the way.
So would they do it again? They are both pretty cautious after the experience and say they have no desire to tear the church apart, but will follow their convictions in the face of what they view is a grave injustice. For WMRA News, I'm Kara Lofton.
I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wished I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. Louisa County's Renard Turner has built an entire life and ranch around sustainability.
Vanguard Ranch is 94 acres of rolling hillside in Louisa County. We are based on all sustainable, natural, and organic principles. We're very, very centered on leaving the land better than we found it. We started with sheep. We raised our registered horn Dorsets. We raised some caracals. We raised some Romanoff sheep. We raised ostrich, and now we're raising meat goats and herbs and vegetables.
Renard grew up as an Air Force brat, living, as he puts it, a little bit of everywhere. He is drawn to science, particularly anatomy and physiology, and so he spent 25 years working in hospitals. He came to work at UVA mainly because he loved the land around the city of Charlottesville, and he wanted to build a land-centric life. Hence the purchase of those 94 acres. The land, I assume, had not been a sustainable farm before.
No, it was totally raw. There was nothing there.
Nothing. No house.
No house, no road.
All right.
Nothing.
What'd you do?
We designed and built a house, passive solar house with geothermal, and we put in a garden, and then we put in a solar greenhouse and a high tunnel and a chicken coop and fencing and barns.
What's a high tunnel? I'm sorry.
A high tunnel is the same as a greenhouse without any mechanical anything. So the sides can roll up, but there's no electricity. There's no supplemental heat. It's totally passive.
All right.
That's
go
the difference.
On after the high tunnel.
And then we started growing a lot of food, and we grew more than we needed. So then we began to sell the surplus. The goal was always to be self-sufficient. And to be self-sufficient, one has to farm, raise, grow something.
We are stars.
I assume, had not been a sustainable farm before.
No, it was totally raw. There was nothing there.
Nothing. No house.
No house, no road.
All right.
Nothing.
What'd you do?
We designed and built a house, passive solar house with geothermal, and we put in a garden, and then we put in a solar greenhouse and a high tunnel and a chicken coop and fencing and barns.
What's a high tunnel? I'm sorry.
A high tunnel is the same as a greenhouse without any mechanical anything. So the sides can roll up, but there's no electricity. There's no supplemental heat. It's totally passive.
All right.
That's
go
the difference.
On after the high tunnel.
And then we started growing a lot of food, and we grew more than we needed. So then we began to sell the surplus. And that's kind of how it evolved now to being, you know, we do about an acre and a half to 2 acres, depending on the season.
Of
mixed
crop.
Produce.
Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain come tumbling down.
And what's the reason for this? The personal reason inside you?
I want the freedom that comes from being self-sufficient. I don't like being dependent. I think that we largely live in a world where the majority of the people are obviously dependent, and I think it's ruined us, and it's made changes in society that are not necessarily good. It's not sustainable.
Ruined us how?
We've become so dependent in our personalities and our thinking that we have not stopped to think about the impact that our obsessive consumption has on the world at large. I just don't like being dependent.
Okay. What does dependence mean to you? What does that mean?
Dependence is kind of like a form of slavery to me. It's kind of like, you know, every time you turn around, you got to pay somebody to do something for you, not necessarily because you can't do it yourself, but simply because you're in a system that doesn't allow you time to do for yourself. So to me, the devil is in the details. I think that modern society has got it pretty much wrong, and we've gone too far with this continuum now where we're all running around too fast, and we don't have time to learn the things. So I basically say we've lost our natural minds, and we've replaced it with some kind of synthetic lifestyle that's not sustainable.
Do you want to be sustainable? Because if we work together, anything is achievable.
In the cause of growing their independence, Renard, his wife, and his friends have started a number of entrepreneurial enterprises connected to the land, including the Vanguard Ranch food truck, which hit the road about a decade ago.
And what happened was, I was at the State Fair in Richmond, and I wanted a lemonade, and it was about closing time, and the first concession trailer I went to didn't have lemonade. But the guy was kind enough to say, hey, walk down 3 units. That's my cousin. I'm going to call him on the cell phone, and he'll have one for you. And I said, great, because all I want was a lemonade, fresh squeeze, you know, the real stuff.
The real stuff.
So I walked down there, and I met this guy, and I said, hey, you know, your cousin just called. He says, oh, yeah, you got the guy who wants the lemonade. I said, yeah. So I got a nice fresh squeeze lemonade, and so we got to talking about the business a bit. And I asked him how we'd like doing it, and he said, this is all I do. I work 6 months out of the year, and I spend the other 6 months at my fishing house in Florida. And I said, that doesn't sound too bad. I said, well, how long have you been doing it? He says, about 18 years. And then he pointed out 4 other units nearby that were all family members. And that's what got me to thinking about maybe this is a viable way to earn a decent income. So I went home and started researching the industry. And one thing led to the other. And we decided to get one of our own, which we did. And then we've gone up and down the road with it. So if you've ever seen the Vanguard Ranch concession trailer, you know we raise the meat goats. But we serve our goats in our concession unit as goat burgers, goat kebabs, and curry goat. And we've done the State Fair of Richmond, lots of food festivals around.
And these days, Vanguard Ranch is also home to the Crossroads Music Festival.
We did Vanguard Ranch concession trailer for 8 years. And I said, you know, I'm spending a lot of time going up and down the road. Let's bring it home. So we cut the trees down off the farm, all red cedar, took them to a local sawmill. And I designed a stage that's 24 by 20, built out of wood from the farm. So we built this stage. It's beautiful, and it works, and it's all old school with pegs.
You're looking pretty perky when you talk about that stage.
It's nice to take it from a vision to a reality and be able to stand on it and play music. Without getting too overly political, we're at a juxtaposition right now where the decisions that we all make are crucially important. If we continue to consume at the rate that we're consuming now, life as we know it is not sustainable on this planet. We have to change that. You know, our dependence on fossil fuel is way out of control. That has to stop. We need to take clues from other countries. You know, Europe is doing a pretty good job of going solar and using natural gases, using wood and so forth to make life more sustainable to them, largely because their countries are smaller, so they really have to be more frugal. Here, we still are pretty obsessed with opulent living. I think that's the best way to put it. We live pretty high on the hog here, and we take too much for granted. I think Americans need to reel it in and be a lot more, considerate.
That's a good word.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. We need to learn how to be more considerate of others, and we're not the only people on the planet, and we need to stop acting like we are.
Sweet world around us.
everything was sweet world. And in her breath of swimming.
You'll find a couple links and a couple pictures related to the doings on Vanguard Ranch and the Crossroads Music Festival on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
I'm Chanel Varani, and this is Our Island Universe. On July 14, 2015, the world awaited confirmation that NASA's New Horizons survived its closest approach to Pluto, now labeled a dwarf planet and located in the Kuiper Belt of our solar system. This rendezvous with Pluto was momentous for several reasons. For one, it closes the chapter on our reconnaissance tour of our solar system that first started with the Mariner program in the early 1960s. Now in 2015, our species has sent robotic sentinels that have visited all eight major planets, two dwarf planets, and even a comet. And the pictures of Pluto showed a surface that no one was expecting. The images returned show mounds made of ice nearly 11,000 feet high, areas on the surface devoid of craters, suggesting an age much younger than anticipated. Pluto's crust is now thought to be made of water ice rather than frozen nitrogen. Best of all, we are literally seeing the tip of the iceberg. Over 95% of the data from that flyby is still on board the spacecraft, awaiting downlink to Earth. Getting all that data will take almost 16 months. So expect many more images and many more discoveries in the months ahead. New Horizons is a gift that will keep on giving, providing us with more clues about how our solar system formed some 5 billion years ago. For the John C. Wells Planetarium, I'm Chanel Varani.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bib and Dolly Fraser, Eugene Stoltzfus, Janet Trentner, Rory and Jamie Kutaya, Joy Loving, Jim and Pam Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of Harrisonburg in Rockingham County. You, too, can contribute to in-depth coverage of issues, events, and people in our community. Find out more about the News and Information Fund at WMRA.org. Where you'll also find all of our stories from the newsroom. Be sure to like us on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter at WMRA Bob. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll see you in the morning.